Shakespeare's King Lear loosely inspired the latest takeaway book club book, The Lobster Kings, by Alexei Zentner, a family tale about the King's clan from Loosewood Island, Maine, descended from a pioneer and famous painter, Brumfitt Kings, who settled the island 300 years ago. Ancient traditions and small-town life are familiar territory for the members of the Middle of the Book book club. Here's Carol Turrentine.
I get the daily records for crime. Generally, what I'm sending out to our neighborhood watch, those people who want to be on it, and it's a pretty extensive list, is for lost and found dogs or pigs, horses or donkeys that get out of
cows.
Their pens.
Cattle.
Cows. Yeah. So we do live in a very bucolic, safe, very community, civic-minded farming community.
Carol, Linda O'Leary, and Jonathan Kern of Middlebrook, Virginia, say they don't often encounter the turmoil and wild adventures on the pages of the Lobster Kings in their own town, like the chilling family curse which claimed the life of Cordelia's brother, Scotty. But they talked for us about the characters in the book as though they were folks they might have run into down at the general store.
I did not like Cordelia from page one. I found that she was a very selfish individual, and I was really liked her father, Woody. I didn't have much empathy for what Cordelia was going through until the middle of the book. Then there was just this rush of all these different events that were happening that were truly tragic. Just what was happening to this family, it was mimicking what was happening in Brumfitt's paintings. And I thought those paintings were created 300 years ago, and here we are in contemporary times, and it's like, there's still this tragedy going on. So that part about King Lear, that part was certainly a parallel to the King Lear story, loosely based.
So, Carol, on the question of character, do you think Alexei Zentner is struggling a little bit to have a main character be a woman? He's speaking, you know, through the eyes of a woman, and it sounds like you didn't necessarily find her credible in some way.
I didn't. I just thought she made some really bad choices that, like I said, were very selfish on her behalf, not thinking about other people. I mean, look at what happened to Scotty, and look what her dad said. She was one of the ones that was responsible for what happened to him, and I'm not going to say what, because so the readers can read it and find out for themselves. But she just didn't seem to learn from her mistakes until later in the book. And it was really when her father was going through his health issues. And even during that time, it took a while. But then she finally, like I think, got it. That, you know, she had to be responsible. And she just did not seem like a responsible person to me. And for someone who she felt that she should be the it of the king's legacy, I didn't think she deserved it until the end of the book.
Yeah, I agree with Carol. I didn't like Cordelia at the beginning. She thought simply because she was there and born that she was going to inherit this legacy. She seemed to be jealous of her sisters and her brother.
You know, in that sense, one of the things that surprised me is, you know, Cordelia is so sure she's going to inherit. And in King Lear, Cordelia is the least sure. Cordelia is the sweetheart who just sort of loves Dad. In the end, and you know, is grateful to inherit, but didn't believe it was going to happen from the beginning, and that's a little bit at odds with the Lear story, Jonathan.
That was one of the sort of strands that Linda and I both were mentioning, I think, earlier to me on this. I didn't go reread all of King Lear after getting through this, but did refresh myself on the whole plot. And so it was a literary device that I thought was just a bit stretched. If you did want to use the King Lear and the Cordelia, then structure the story a tiny bit closer to the plot. Either have made the two sisters not necessarily evil, but more, it was Cordelia who imagined that her sisters were proactively trying to sabotage the relationship with the father or whatever. So, yeah, I thought that that was one example of a little bit of the stretch of trying to bring something into the novel that either didn't necessarily need to be there, but once you had, I would have rather you'd amplified it more or used it more than it was.
Anyone expecting this to be a modern interpretation of King Lear would be very, very disappointed. And if you read the cover of the book, the back cover even mentions the King Lear reference, and so you're expecting something that's really not there.
Yeah, Woody is not a lunatic, that's for sure. He's actually very sympathetic.
It wasn't even fading powers. I mean, at the point... Okay, so the scene where he comes back from the hospital and he divides up the family, the quote family fortune, so to speak, and Cordelia gets nothing because she doesn't ask for anything, because she doesn't have anyone to ask anything for. I suppose... But that's hardly in the same lines as Goneril and the others with their fake protestations of love to King Lear and Cordelia's, you know, blunt honesty, and so she gets nothing kind of thing. And so, yeah, I agree with Linda there. I wasn't expecting a retelling of King Lear, but it was sort of, well, if you're going to use this plot device or literary device, then go right forward, use it.
Oh, I thought Woody was very fair to all of the children, really, especially the three girls. And, you know, it was in the end that Cordelia really got the best gift of all. She ended up getting the future, you know, the past and the future, if you know what I mean, with the descriptions of that particular painting at the end of the book. And what there were how many other paintings in that box? There were a lot.
25 or
those are, yeah. And I have a feeling she's going to hold on to those for the future. Those aren't going anywhere.
And that's really the family legacy, is this founder of the island lobster business is a painter. And he, you know, in many ways the story is told through these paintings, which I was really skeptical of because I can't see the paintings. And him describing paintings sounded to me like something that was going to be very annoying. But it actually was quite beautiful. There's one particular painting where it's the painting of the grandson dying, you know, having drowned and caught in the nets. Yeah. I mean, it was just a page and a half, but whoa.
Yeah, you could almost see it happening. Yeah, it was really something. But that's the whole thing about the future and what happened to Scotty. And, of course, what happened to Scotty happened pretty early on, and then it was, you know, you're going, well, okay, so what's going to happen? What's going to happen next? And then it just kept happening.
Yeah.
Everybody kept, I mean, that family lost so many people in their own generation, but they gained a lot. I mean, I think they gained an understanding of each other. Sounds like with Cordelia's leadership, it will remain a lobster king family.
Thanks to Carol Turrentine, Linda O'Leary, and Jonathan Kern, members of the Middle of the Book Book Club. Read along with us at thetakeaway.org/bookclub to find all our books in our series. Tell us your reading preference, book or ebook. And from Portland, Oregon, only paper books for the kids because I don't trust them with an expensive internet-enabled machine. Nothing against digital books. I do love my Kindle. Northern New Jersey says, I only read paper. It's so much more intimate. Reading on a screen is cold. Don't really feel the emotions within the story.
Hi, this is Mickey Curry from Astigo Park. I have a Kindle. I fought it for some time, but now I find it much more convenient. I do miss the feel of a paperback, but I never really liked hardcovers.
Thanks, Mickey. And Gonzalez, Florida, dodged the whole question. Tells us, I listen to audiobooks. We're fine with that. Technology and your changing reading habits. Tell us all about it, 877-8-MY-TAKE, or send us a tweet, at The Takeaway. Thanks so much for listening. I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.